Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome back to New Books in Jewish Studies. I'm your host, Max Kaiser. We have a great show for you today. With us, we have Isabel Hess, lecturer in English at the University of Sydney. She's here to talk about her new book, The Politics of Jewishness in Contemporary World Literature, The Holocaust, Zionism, and Colonialism, published this year by Bloomsbury Academic. Isabel, thanks very much for being on the show.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here.
First off, how did you come to write this book?
This book is actually based on my PhD research, which I carried out at the University of York. So I was interested in how ideas of Jewishness were represented in different types of literatures. And I guess I started off during my undergrad and postgrad studies when I was specializing in post-colonial studies. And I'd also been interested in the Holocaust since primary school. And I think at some point all these ideas started coming together. So I was really interested in how post-colonial novels used ideas of Jewishness. I think this was also a time when a lot of novels came out that drew on ideas of Jewishness, for example, Salman Rushdie, Vikram Seth. And I think at the time I was also reading Andrea Levy's Small Island, which discusses the black racism or the racism against black people during World War II. And I think that really got me thinking about the similarities between the discrimination of black people, between Jewish people, and then also thinking how this links to Israel and Palestine and how some of these ideas, or at least these ideologies, are continued in different contexts.
Great. So you use the term ideas of Jewishness. Could you unpack that a little bit? What are ideas of Jewishness and how have they changed?
I think I quite consciously choose ideas because for me that embodies a sense of there's a reality, but this reality is adapted in fiction. And in all of the novels I'm working on, there is a strong sense that the authors are influenced by actual ideas of Jewishness, but that they also fictionalize these ideas. And ideas they draw on are quite wide-ranging. So they start with ideas of Jewishness linked to minority, so being a wanderer, being marginalized, being in exile and diaspora, and also being a victim. And then as they move along, there's some strong emphasis on ideas of Jewishness as linked to majority. So, for example, Jewish majority in the diaspora, but also, of course, Jewish majority in Israel, and how these ideas of Jewishness are transformed with the establishment of a Jewish state, how they become linked to ideas of Israeliness, to Zionism, settler colonialism, and to building a nation for the first time.
So we'll just get stuck into the book chapter by chapter. In chapter two, you discuss German Jewish representations of Jewish victimhood and minority identity after World War II. Mm. Can you tell us a bit about this?
Yeah, actually, that's quite an interesting chapter, and I think it has a lot of interesting fictionalizations of Jewishness. So I'm looking at two novels by German Jewish writers, and I specifically do not focus on their, what would you term their Holocaust fiction, but I analyzed their later books, which were published in the 1970s and 1980s. So they gave them a bit of distance from ideas of Jewish victimhood that emerged during and after the Holocaust. And I think what they do quite interestingly in their novels is that they contest the clear-cut categories between victim and perpetrator. So they invert the binary opposition between Nazi and Jew, for example, Edgar Hildenrath does this in his satirical appraisal of the journey of a Nazi who adopts his Jewish friend's identity to escape punishment for his crimes in Germany, and then he moves to Israel and he becomes a Zionist. And similarly, in Jörg Becker's Bronstein's Children, there's an emphasis on victimhood as defining identity, but in Bronstein's Children, it's also refuted because there's a strong emphasis on suggesting that victimhood cannot be equated with innocence and evading responsibility, and this is portrayed through a generational conflict. And I think in both novels, you have this contestation of essentialist categories, so not only the idea of the Jew as a definitive category that is linked to victimhood in post-war Germany, but also this idea of Germany being linked with Nazism and this idea that victims are always innocent.
You move on to discuss Israeli literature, particularly literature which questions the foundational myths of Israel. Mm. What are those myths, and how did the text that you've analysed contest them?
Well, the foundational myths of Israel are, of course, the return to the Jewish land, the idea that this land was empty, and then the dismissal of the experience of the diaspora. And the novels I'm looking at, they quite specifically engage with the experience of the Holocaust as a diaspora experience. But they also think about specifically Shulamit Haraven in her Desert trilogy. She thinks about the Exodus myth and how this myth is used as a foundation for the state of Israel and to create a sense of nationhood. And she basically debunks this myth because she shows the Hebrew people not as a unified nation. So we see them wandering through the deserts, but they're not unified by a leader. So, for example, she takes the character of Moses from the Bible, but Moses is quite inept as a leader. He does not manage to help the people initially to find their way. And she also suggests alternative readings of the Bible and also alternative stories for Israel. So, for example, we also see the conquest of the Hebrew people. So this is quite a violent conquest. And we see the consequences for the people who are conquered by the Hebrews. And I think this is quite interesting if you consider it in light of contemporary politics in Israel-Palestine. And although I'm not suggesting that Haraven is drawing easy parallels here, in a nonfiction you get quite a strong sense that she's not happy with the way in which Israel occupies Palestinian territories, and that she's also addressing the consequences for Israeli identity that this occupation entails.
Right. So you suggest that the figure of the Jew is becoming a recurrent trope in post-colonial literature. Can you tell us about why this is? What is the Jew symbolic of, and how does that work out in the text that you're looking at here?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. I think in many ways the figure of the Jew becomes symbolic of cosmopolitanism, of this idea of being able to move from one context into another one. And I think that's what you can see in many post-colonial novels. I think Salman Rushdie often uses the Jew as a cosmopolitan figure to draw attention to the experience of other minority identities. In the two novels that I'm looking at, Anita Desai's Baumgartner's Bombay and Carrie Fletcher's The Nature of Blood, I think they do something a bit more interesting with the figure of the Jew. So it's not only an easily transferable cosmopolitanism that they draw on, but they specifically think about the Jewish minority experience. For example, you see Carrie Phillips aligning the experience of the Jews during the Holocaust with the Jews' experience in early modern Europe, but then also thinking about black racism in early modern Europe and thinking about the situation of the Mizrahi Jews in Israel. And what they also do is they draw on ideas of Jewish majority. So they think about how Jewish majority identity combines notions of Jewish minority and majority, and also the links from moving from being a minority to becoming majority. And I think this is also aligned with the post-colonial condition of being a colonized and then the post-colonial nation. So I think in many ways, what especially Carol Phillips is doing is thinking about the consequences of building a nation, of emancipation, and some of the problems that arise once you have established a new nation, which is, of course, also true for Israel, which in many ways had to think about how to create a new identity for the new nation and how to integrate different minorities into a majority.
So it's a good lead into the next topic of discussion, which is when you talk about a number of works of contemporary Israeli Mizrahi fiction, and you say that the fiction draws attention to their situation as between Arabs and Jews and colonized and colonizers. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yes, absolutely. I think they're quite interesting in their status as being from North African and Middle Eastern countries. So they have an Arab culture, they speak Arabic, and on the other hand, they're Jewish, other than their religion, or they might also be secular, but they also identify themselves as Jewish. So I think in that sense, they're positioned between two different cultures. And of course, in Israel, they're required to conform to ideas of European Jewishness rather than Mizrahi or Arab Jewishness. And I think that's quite an interesting tension. And if you think about them in the hierarchy of the state, they also occupy a quite interesting position in relation to colonization. So, for example, the Mizrahi Jews are typically perceived as not having been present during the state building years, so they're not considered to be pioneers or sabras, although this is not historically accurate because there were Jews from Yemen who were present in the early state building years. And of course, if you then think about the occupation of the Palestinian territories, on one hand, they would not, if you think of this in terms of colonialism, they would not be considered part of the colonizer because they're considered second-class citizens in Israel. But on the other hand, they're also not as colonized as the Palestinians because as Jews, they have more rights and they have more access to different services that the Palestinians are prevented from accessing. So I think they have an interesting, but of course also problematic position in between the top and the bottom almost. So I think, yeah, between colonizers and colonized, and then, of course, between Arabs and Jews.
And how do those tensions play out in the literature?
I think the literature literature uses quite interesting means to engage with this. For example, Sammy Michael's early discussion of the position of the Iraqi Jews in Israel uses a more conservative approach. So we can see that the Iraqi Jews are aware of themselves as being from Iraq. They have history in Iraq. They draw on their diaspora experience. But on the other hand, he's also quite clear in his novel, which is called Equal and More Equal, that you need to adopt or assimilate to European Jewish values in order to be able to move up in the ranks of society. And I think the two more recent novels I'm looking at, which is Yossi Sukari's Emilia and the Salt of the Earth and Sarah Shiloh's The Falafel King is Dead, they show more interesting tensions between the Arab side and the Jewish side of Mizrahi Jewish identities. So, for example, both novels engage with the 1967 war, which was also discussed in Sammy Michael's novel, and they specifically take this war as a moment where their loyalties are questioned and where they have to be quite explicit about their alliance with the Jewish people rather than with the Arab nations. So they're asked to take position in terms of a war that they are not involved on an ideological level, although some of them, of course, participated in the war, but they're already in between and still they're asked to choose a position. And I think another interesting example is the Holocaust, which is often considered a European Jewish event in Israel, although there's been a lot of recent work on trying to make it a more inclusive event to think about other victims apart from European Jewish victims of the Holocaust. And I think both novels also think about this idea of Mizrahi Jews as victims of the Holocaust. For example, Libyan Jews, here, Yossi Sukari discusses this in his novel, and how their experience in the diaspora feeds into Israeli national discourse. And I think it's quite interesting how, especially the more recent novels, so Shiloh and Sukari, distance themselves as well from this idea of Zionism, and they refuse to define their identity exclusively in relation to Zionism and Israeli Jewishness.
You then move on to talk about Israeli-Palestinian fiction. So how do the texts that you examine look at the problem of defining an identity for a Palestinian community in what's defined as a Jewish national space, so within Israel?
I think, again, that's an interesting case. And I think if you connect it to the Mizrahi Jewish experience, there are some similarities, but I think there are also quite telling differences. So, for example, the Israeli-Palestinian novel I'm looking at in the book is Anton Shamas' Arabesque, which is, of course, written in Hebrew, and that's already consists considers quite an important aspect of what it means to be Jewish, so to speak the Hebrew language and to write in it. And he has been commended for how well he's doing this. Of course, in many ways, this is a bit patronizing. But I think it's interesting that he chooses to write in Hebrew and to make his point in Hebrew. And this is an idea that permeates his novel. So this idea of questioning the idea of Jewishness, questioning the idea of Israeliness, and showing that Israeliness is so much more than just being about European Jewishness, but that there's also Israeli Palestinians. And there's also Palestinians who define themselves in relation to Israeliness, although, of course, they're not present in what would be considered an Israeli national space. And I think in many ways, Anton Shamas is also responding to A.B. Joshua's novel, The Lover, which includes an Israeli-Palestinian character. And again, it's quite revolutionary in many ways because it's one of the first books in Hebrew literature to represent an Israeli-Palestinian character. But in the end, his resolution is quite conservative. And I think this is one of the things that Shamas also addresses in his novel. So first of all, he makes it quite clear that he finds it offensive to include a character that is from a different identitarian location and then to present him in a very benevolent way. So the character Naim is never considered to be threatening or to be too other to be part of the Israeli national space. Although, of course, at the end of the novel, he has to be relocated to his Israeli-Palestinian village to make sure that the Israeli-Jewish national space remains intact. But I think Shamas is also showing what you can do with language and how language functions as a colonizing device. So this idea that Hebrew is also a colonizing force, and I think he writes back to that in his novel as well. So resisting the master with using his own tools.
You write about two different types of Jewish characters in Palestinian literature that's from the West Bank. So on one hand, flat, interchangeable characters that are soldiers and settlers, and then you have also more complex depictions of Jewish characters that are Jewish civilians. Can you tell us a bit about this?
Yeah, absolutely. The novels I'm looking at are by Sarah Khalifa and Rada Shehadeh, and as I said, both of them depict life in the West Bank, where, of course, your encounter with Jewish characters is quite limited. So on one hand, you get encounters with settlers and soldiers, which are quite one-dimensional. And as I argue in the book, this is, of course, done on purpose to show the inhumanity of the encounters, for example, at checkpoints with soldiers or the dangers and the risks associated with encountering settlers and the danger that Palestinians perceive themselves to be in. But I think what is interesting in the book is that there's encounters with civilians, which are much more developed and which reveal a sense or an ability to empathize with the other side. So, for example, you have in Sarah Khalifa's The End of Spring, one of the main characters, the Palestinian Ahmad, encounters Mira, who is a Jewish girl from a settlement. And they develop a friendship. And for a while, it looks like Khalifa is really advocating this idea of dialogue and to get to know the other side. But of course, at the end of the novel, this friendship cannot persist because on a more general level, Khalifa is quite aware that before that, that there's any kind of dialogue, there's so many injustices that need to be redressed and past sufferings and wrongs that need to be remedied before there can be a dialogue between both sides. And also in Shahada's novel, we see a friendship between himself and he has a Jewish friend who's called Enoch, and they exchange their different histories of suffering. So he exhibits a sense of being aware of the Jewish suffering, and his friends also empathizes with the suffering of the Palestinians. But again, you see quite a pronounced rejection of this friendship because as the novels go along and also as time passes, the political situation of the Palestinians influences the representation of this interaction, and you just see that on a political and ideological level, these friendships cannot persist.
So in your final chapter, you turn to the metropolitan imaginary and a particular text that you say complicates a common binary perception of Western versus Arab conceptions of the Holocaust and Jewish suffering. Can you tell us a bit about this?
Yeah, so basically Gilbert Achka argues in his book that on one hand the West perceives the Holocaust as an event that is linked to responsibility and guilt, so the sense that on a certain level everyone is guilty of not doing something to prevent the Holocaust. And then the more the opposed view would be the Arab perspective on the Holocaust. It's quite strongly influenced by an empathy for Palestinian suffering and the Palestinian cause, which supersedes the Jewish suffering in this perception. And in the final chapter, I look at Boualem Sansal's novel, An Unfinished Business. And he's a French-Algerian writer, so I think that's already quite an interesting hyphenated identity. So on one hand, you have the French identity and then the Algerian identity, so a tension between the West and the Arab sides and the perspectives on the Holocaust. And he also transfers this onto his characters. So his characters also have a French-Algerian heritage, but their father was a member of the SS. And throughout the novel, there's the sense that both brothers need to engage with the Nazi past of their father and to find out more about the Holocaust to be able to come to terms with their own identity. And I think what Sansal shows here is that there's not necessarily an equation between being Arab and rejecting the Holocaust, or between being Western and adopting a perspective of guilt or responsibility towards the Holocaust. Although this is the resolution he chooses in the end for his novel. So he has one of the brothers who feels so guilty about what his father has done during the Holocaust that he commits suicide. But then on the other hand, you have the second brother who chooses to learn from the lessons of the Holocaust and to fight against Islamic fundamentalism on his council estate.
Thanks very much for walking us through the main themes of your book and the arguments. I think we managed to cover a lot of ground in a short space of time. Just before we let you go, can you tell us a bit about what you're working on next?
Yeah, sure. So currently I'm working on a project that examines the Holocaust, Israel-Palestine, as its narrative tropes in British and German culture. So I'm following up on some of the ideas that emerged in my book. And I'm specifically interested in how a politically charged context such as Israel-Palestine and, of course, also the Holocaust can be represented in different genres. So, for example, I'm looking at comedy, I'm looking at travelogues and also documentary films. And I'm also quite interested in how these tropes are represented in relation to each other. So how the Holocaust might be used, or some tropes that are familiar from representing the Holocaust are used to engage with Israel or Palestine.
Great, that sounds really interesting. All right, well, thanks very much for being on the show with us today, Isabel.
Thanks for having me. It's great.
Thank you. You've been listening to New Books in Jewish Studies with your host, Max Kaiser. With us today, we've had Isabel Hess, who's lecturer in English at the University of Sydney. She talked to us about her new book, The Politics of Jewishness in Contemporary World Literature, The Holocaust, Zionism, and Colonialism, published this year by Bloomsbury Academic. Thanks very much.